My name's John Elliott, and this is a podcast from the Insights in Jazz series, www.dropback.co.uk. So this week we've got another interview podcast with, would you like to introduce yourself please?
Yeah, hi, my name's Phil Clark. I'm a saxophone player. I play tenor and soprano saxes, and I've been using the Lego method for some years now.
Okay, so Phil, we've not actually met, but we've had quite a lot of email correspondence about a year or two ago. When I was writing my book, you were really helpful about sharing your experiences with the method. How did you first come across the method?
I got interested in jazz when I was in my teens, really, I suppose. And when I was at sort of university, I was involved in the jazz society there and got to see many British jazz musicians. And, you know, it really sort of struck me that whenever I saw them playing, they weren't using any music at all. It was all from memory, really. And I sort of got in my head that that was the way to do it, really. And that's sort of what I aspired to. And then I was looking at I think it was the Jazzwise catalogue in the early days of Jazzwise, and came across Conrad's book. This was the early second edition, I think, with the yellow cover, and it really clicked with me, you know, it stimulated a lot of my thinking, and it gave me a lot to think about, you know, and that's how I got into it, started reading that book. But in doing so, you know, I found that there were a few things in there which didn't really satisfy, you know, although the ideas were there. You know, I found the brick walls in there. I don't know if you're familiar with that book, John, but the brick walls in that book were very, very sparse and supported by a lot of verbose sort of descriptions. It was a number of years later when Conrad's third edition of his book came out, and, you know, that had a lot more information in it. It was about four times the thickness, I think, the book was, and it really gave me a lot more to get my teeth into. And he seemed to have dispensed with the original brick walls from the second edition, and had reverted to just putting the chords in a sort of what he called the Grigson grid. I still wasn't satisfied by this. I wanted something which satisfied my desire to see the thing laid out more clearly, and because of the sort of job I do and the my familiarity with Excel and things, I sort of saw an opportunity here to lay things out in a different way, with the bricks and the joins being shown at the point that they occurred on the grid.
Yeah, so you basically proposed that way of laying things out in Excel, and you donated, I think it was 79 roadmaps to the Google group.
Over a number of years, really, I started to analyse more tunes that I liked, not necessarily the ones that were in Conrad's original sort of analyses, but picked tunes that I liked, and began to analyse them and build up this big Excel workbook of the tunes. And of course, along the way, realizing that, you know, there were new problems coming through which weren't adequately dealt with in Conrad's books, you know, some new constructs and things which were difficult to describe.
That's right.
You recognize, yeah.
And I remember we that led to us having email discussions about various things, and it was your roadmaps that inspired me to actually write my book, because I realized that what people most wanted, having read Conrad's book, was actual proof of a significant body of songs. Because, that, like you say, as soon as you stray beyond the ones that are in his book, you find you start having to invent exceptions and so on.
That's right. Yeah, I guess, you know, I always had in mind that one day I might have written such a book, but, you know, my life being what it is, and I'm busy with so many things and different commitments, it was never going to happen, quite honestly. And when you came along and decided you wanted to do that, it was great. You know, it's really good to see some of the foundation that I've made have been picked up by someone, and the amount of work that you've put in, you know, to producing a more coherent view of perhaps some of the ideas that I'd put together, and you've brought together into this coherent book, which really captures it all in very succinct form.
But I think it certainly is helpful. I think what we also need to remember is that you've got to forget that stuff when you're playing as well. Get into your subconscious.
Absolutely, yeah. I guess I started off when I was analysing, you know, trying to wanting everything to fit neatly into a box, you know, and but after a while came to realize, you know, you've got to go with the flow. And I've got a systems engineering background, you know, in systems thinking, and realize that when you develop systems, you know, there's this concept of what's called emergence. You know, these properties emerge from the system you're trying to put in place. And I just went with the flow basically and tried to piece the picture together. As I analyze more tunes, things emerge, patterns emerge, and you gradually change your ideas as you go along rather than trying to be too rigid right at the beginning, you know, and have everything tied down.
That's a really interesting idea. That I certainly found that a lot, is that you find that the end of one brick is the beginning of the next brick, and there's no nice way of saying that, really.
That's right.
So yeah. did you find, when you started to apply this and actually apply it to your playing, did you find that the way you play changed?
I'd always aspired to you know, playing tunes without having any music, and I sort of felt inside that I didn't want to really go and start playing jazz publicly until I got to that position, and I, you know, I really had this sort of goal I had to achieve before I put myself out to the public, as it were. And so I spent a lot of time working with Lego and building up the repertoire before I even went as far as getting a band together. I mean, I play in other bands as well. You know, I play in big bands, and I'm in another band now with 12 saxes and rhythm section. That's entirely different from the sort of quartet situation where I'm playing, you know, the repertoire that I like, and the focus is more on the improvisation.
Have you read my book, and have you used my book at all?
What I've done is I've skimmed through it, dipped in a bit, and had a look. And you know, generally, I like what I see, and it's sound. And when I come back to it at some point, I intend to try and get to grips with some of the new bricks and things you've identified at a deeper level. You know, because some of these things you've identified, I'd worked with previously, and I identified some of my own terminology, which, you know, you doing a more sort of thorough analysis of a wider number of tunes, you've sort of come up with slightly different ideas. And I think there's some value in the community, as it were, moving towards a common terminology, common semantics. So it'd be good for me to learn some of the new terms and familiarize with those.
I know what you mean. I'm always a bit nervous about being prescriptive, because I mean, this has come up on the group recently in some questions, you know, about the roadmaps. Because I think the more you learn, the more difficult it is to accept someone else's prescription about what something might be called or how something might be analysed. And I think the way we learn is we build up layers of understanding. And the further you go down that path, the harder it is to accept someone else's interpretation. There's real value in sharing each other's analysis, because I know I learned an awful lot from looking at your 79 roadmaps, and actually, you know, several of the bricks in my book came directly from you, like the autumnal cadence was one of yours that I remember off the top of my head.
Yes, you know? I recognize those.
So
yeah.
when you were playing, did you play a lot with singers, and did you have to apply the sort of ability to play in many keys?
Right. Well, I guess it's slightly different from me being a horn player. You know, I think for a pianist like yourself, it's particularly important. You know, you're often in a situation where you're with a vocalist and you need to be able to play in different keys. Having said that, you know, when I did finally get it together and felt confident about getting together with other musicians, sort of I advertised for some other people in the similar position to get a band going. We managed to get a quartet going, and together sort of worked through and learned some repertoire and gradually built my confidence, and then we started doing some gigs. But say about 6 months to a year into doing that, we brought a singer into the band. She did start doing songs in different keys, and I did find the Lego approach very helpful in learning to play those tunes in different keys.
And did you find that if a new song was brought along, did you find that you couldn't play it until you'd done like a thorough analysis of it?
I guess so, yeah. I tried to do that with everything. I always like to play without the music, because it's that really frees you up. you know, and then you can just focus on the ideas. Once the sequence is so ingrained, you know, you just sort of forget it and play around it.
Sure. And how long would you say it would take you to do one of those analyses?
It depends on the difficulties I found. Quite often, you may have seen in some of my brick walls, you know, I left gaps or put question marks there, you know, what's this? But more often than not, it's the unusual bits which, you know, or make a tune unique. If you've got something which doesn't appear in many other tunes, it's something that just gives that tune its personality. I guess, you know, fairly simple tune. I could analyze it in an hour or so. I sort of came up with my own process, which is a bit long-winded, and I'm sure other people follow a similar thing. But really, you know, a process for getting it together, getting the tune together that I like, how I liked it. You know, so the first thing I do is sort of listen to as many different versions of the tune as possible. You know, any I could get my hands on, really. And after a while, you know, I'd hear which of those sounded best to my ears, you know, because as you know, different people use different chords and substitutions, invariably so wrong chords and things as well. Yeah. Anyway, using my ears, I'd select a version that I really liked, both in terms of chords and melody. Then I'd transcribe it, so I knew what the chords were that were being played, and I'd do a Lego analysis of the harmony, and then I'd at that time I used to use an electronic sequencer, and I'd sort of record the chord sequences and the melody into that sequencer. And then one thing, you know, I've got a full-time job as well, so I've got limited time to work on this. So what I did was get myself one of these, I don't know if you come across some of these MIDI wind synthesizers.
All
so
right.
I'd take this to work and, you know, set it up through a little mixer and headphones with a CD player or MP3 player or something with all the backing tracks on, and every lunchtime, you know, I'd spend 45 minutes or an hour working on this stuff. And basically, you know, by playing it over and over and over again and learning the melody by ear, I felt that was most important, not to use the music at all, but to get the ear to listen to the melody and just go over and over it and play along with the backing track. The way I record it is I'd record the backing track with, say, four or five choruses, and just over the first chorus I'd record the melody. So, you know, I'd play that over and over till I really got the melody, and then I'd play all the way through and just keep playing the melody over and over again until it was really ingrained.
By the way, congratulations on your 50th birthday.
Thank you.
did you have a good time?
Yeah, I did, thanks. Yeah.
Okay, Phil, well, I really appreciate your time for making this podcast. And I also am very appreciative of all the work that you did that kind of inspired me to get going on the analysis and push it that step further.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, I'll just reiterate, you know, I was really pleased that you've got this book together and all the work that's been done. I think it's really moved the whole thing forward, you know, by a quantum leap, really, you know. Great.
Okay. All right.
Nice talking to you anyway, John.
You too. Thanks, yeah. Phil.
Okay.
Cheers.
Bye.
My name is John Elliott. I'm the author of Insights in Jazz, which is available from www.dropback.co.uk. If you've got any questions you'd like to ask about the podcast or the method in the book or any suggestions you'd like to make for future podcasts, then please contact me by emailing me at john@dropback.co.uk. If you found this podcast useful and you'd like to leave a tip, then you can visit the website where there's a PayPal donate button. Thanks for listening.